And we're talking some intellectual property rights issues with music. So I just wanted you to have a little bit of a listen to this sample here. Certainly it does seem a little bit familiar, that one there. It's not Stairway to Heaven. It's actually a track called Taurus from the band Spirit. Here's the comparison with Led Zeppelin itself, the very, very famous opening of their most famous track, Stairway to Heaven. No music expert, but certainly some similarities to be bore there. It's arguably one of the most famous songs in rock history, and it could become one of the most infamous. Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. It's being put before a jury in a few weeks to decide whether the song is liable for copyright infringement. The song it's accused of infringing on is Taurus by American rock band Spirit, who Led Zeppelin were affiliated with previous to actually releasing Stairway to Heaven. And so you've heard the two of those side by side. Intellectual property copyright, it's difficult to transverse. So to help us understand how and why Led Zepp are on trial and to help us maybe inform our own opinions, I'm joined by Dr. Guy Morrow, lecturer in the creative industries at Macquarie University. Guy, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us here on the Daily Program.
Sure.
Now, the Statute of Limitations for Copyright Infringement states that action must be taken within 3 years of the release of this piece. Now, this is not new information, the comparison between Taurus and Stairway to Heaven, but why is it that the band Spirit never sued Led Zeppelin back in the 1970s when the song was originally released?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. It makes me think that the Blurred Lines case, which led to a major settlement with numerous parties who had a copyright claim to that particular song, has influenced this decision by people who control the estate of the now deceased songwriter in Taurus to actually pursue legal proceedings against Led Zeppelin. Mm. But yeah, it's a good point about the statute of limitations there. Definitely.
Well, you mentioned that Blurred Lines case there, and we've seen this in multiple other cases previously. Intellectual ownership of music, it has kind of a murky history, given that musical styles are always constantly borrowing from one another. So how is it we actually enforce music copyright law in cases where, well, it sounds similar to the ear, but we're not really sure how direct the influence actually was?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I don't think that it's appropriate to consider the act of devising a tune that simply has the same feel or groove as another as copyright infringement. And if you look at the history of musical creation, you go back to Beethoven, Mozart, and others, all significantly borrowed from earlier colleagues, and that idea of music being a process of conceptual elaboration, conceptual combination, and that idea of trying to ascertain whether it's an infringement copyright based on feel is really tricky to do. I do know that the parties behind Mark Ronson and his track Uptown Funk actually did it on the front end of their release of that track. So they've actually pre-cleared and have assigned copyright to numerous parties who subsequently may have had a claim on the piece.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I answered the question there.
Well, given that complication, given that that complex idea of you can't just judge it on a feel, you do need some sort of basis behind this, is it appropriate to go before a jury of people who may not have that much of an understanding of music or composition. Isn't it an appropriate place to be making this kind of decision?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm sure they'd bring musicologists in who have expertise in explaining how the pieces are comparable in terms of being able to show charts and things like that. If it was to be, I guess, just expanded upon that notion of the feel or the vibe of it, mm-hmm. To ascertain whether it's breaching copyright.
Now, you mentioned this one was following on, or quite plausibly following on from the Blurred Lines case. If this one were to go through successfully, if Spirit were to come and claim ownership of the opening riff of Stairway to Heaven, say, no, that is a copyright infringement, and given this is years and years after the release of the original songs, if it was successful, do we see a possible chain reaction in more artists coming forward to claim what they believe are similarities to their music, you know, in other songs?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think that last year's decision in the Blurred Lines case has already sent a bad signal. And if this jury involved in the Stairway to Heaven case follow a similar path, it could lead to issues to do with how people do borrow and do conceptually elaborate on others' work to create new material, so it's that difficult balance between proprietary rights and the processes of musical creativity and the extent to which musicians don't necessarily just create compositions from purely from scratch through improvising. It's often based on a pre-existing idea. I mean, Led Zeppelin's an interesting band because they are known for having borrowed a lot from previous artists within the blues genre that they were drawing from. It's a tricky one, but if it sets that that precedent of, I guess, just overt litigation in terms of copyright infringement, arguably not a good thing for musical creativity. Mm.
Well, perhaps just as a final point, Guy, Stairway to Heaven, it's had a huge impact on popular culture. It's arguably the better song, given that it has had that that massive impact on popular culture, as opposed to Taurus from the band Spirit. And we can create these sort of wonderful new works of art by sampling, borrowing, or outright stealing. In your opinion, as somebody who looks into these issues, do you think that blurred line between creativity and theft should be erased? Should we just go, well, this is just a source of inspiration, and I think we should worry a little bit less about it?
Yeah, it's that, yeah, trying to strike that tricky balance between having, you know, an asset that you can build a business around and thus incentivize people to create through the possibility of remuneration off the back of the copyright. And that notion that we naturally, and it's not just in terms of musical creativity, if you look at any number of forms of creativity, there's a process of borrowing. Mm. And I think, I mean, if you look at, say, the academic world, we cite each other. There's a system for doing that, whether there's a way to cite other people in terms of your work. I mean, the Creative Commons licensing scheme helps you to do that in terms of primarily amateur culture, because you can have an attribution, say a non-commercial attribution license that gives permission for people to use your work if it's for non-commercial purposes, mm-hmm. and they attribute you. But ultimately, we also have professional culture or you know, the record business, whereby you are trying to protect an asset, and then it becomes comparable to people trying to innovate in the sciences, trying to protect patents and so forth. It's hard to have that idea of a blanket agreement that could work. I mean, it's going to depend on the agreement between the different people who have a claim on that intellectual property in each case. But Yeah, then I guess it's a question of the expense of taking it through the courts as well as to whether you can do something about it and so forth.
Well, Guy, thank you very much. It'll be very interesting to see how this one unfolds and then the aftermath of it unfolds. Do appreciate your time this morning.
No worries. Thanks for having me.